We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Welcome to episode number 16 of Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates fierce and formidable women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
And I'm Frances Gibson. And we're so excited that you're joining us today with a virtual smile as we get even closer to turning those virtual hugs into real embraces. And today we're embracing another fierce female with an incredible story. Joining us from Miami is Marie Izquierdo. So let's learn a little bit more about Marie, a person you will definitely want to embrace. Marie is a career educator with nearly 30 years of experience in school reform. She's the Chief Strategy Officer, the CSO, for Miami-Dade County Public Schools, the nation's fourth largest school system, which serves over 350,000 students and employs over 53,000 teachers and staff. She has served in several senior leadership roles, including the Deputy Chief of Staff and the Chief Academic Officer. She's a former social studies teacher who is focused on dropout prevention and is really engaged in curriculum that has been transformative in her community. It's no wonder that she was recognized quickly by the Florida Department of Education as they recruited her to boost student achievement in the state's lowest performing schools as the regional executive director. And under her leadership, over 79% of the targeted schools improved both their school grade and percentages of adequate yearly progress. I think we all need a Marie in our system. Later, under the leadership of Superintendent Alberto Carvalho, she was instrumental in the passage of a $1.2 billion general obligation bond for renovating school facilities and purchasing new technology, something that she's been recognized with formally, and earned the prestigious Broad Prize in Urban Education in 2012. As CAO, she has been a leader among leaders, spearheading major efforts that have increased graduation rates, have increased opportunities from choice when it comes to national magnet programs, or whether it's the College Board Award for Access and Equity, or getting students in a place where they have technology in their hands with high quality curriculum. She's also been a trailblazer when it comes to dual enrollment for students, and she's been named the Center for Digital Education's top 30 technologists, transformers, and trailblazers. She's an alum of the prestigious Broad Academy in 2019, and she continues to be in the space of receiving lots of accolades from not only her community, but also her peers at nationwide. She's a member of Chiefs for Change, and boy, is she changing the world. We are so lucky to have this Miami native from Little Havana join us today. She resides there with her husband and three children. And let's hear more about this incredible story of Marie Izquierdo.
We're so lucky to have Marie as one of our sheroes in education. She has been someone that I have turned to for many years, just seeking advice and wisdom. And you know, I felt like I was at a roadblock and I knew I could call her and she'd be like, well, have you thought about this? I'm like, nope. As a matter of fact, I have not. Thank you very much. And I did the same thing with you, Dr. Gibson. So I really appreciate being surrounded with so many incredible sheroes in education. Marie, each week we explore models of leadership together and we focus on what we call the pattern of M. And we ask our guests who their mentors are and how the mentors have impacted their life. And then we ask them to consider the mirrors and movements and then maverick moments. So it's a tongue twister for sure, but it is something that we have enjoyed conversing about with our audience.
Well, Keisha, there's definitely strength in that because today we are a tripod balancing one another out from coast to coast and across the nation as fierce women. And you noticed there was some edgy babble in that bio. And of course, so many accolades. I feel like we need to make sure we clarify some of that edgy babble. So Marie, you've been in a lot of C-level positions and you've obviously been recognized with tons of awards for the great work that you do. But I noticed there was a shift from a CAO to a CSO, which is your new role. Can you tell us more about what is a CSO and what's this C-level position about? Welcome.
Absolutely. Thank you, Frances. Thank you, Keisha, for having me. I'm very excited. I don't know if I would consider myself fierce and formidable, but I guess I'm in great company. I'm really excited to be here today. And yes, I am currently the Chief Strategy Officer for Miami-Dade. I did do that shift in my career. There was a gap here in Miami-Dade. We had just sunsetted our strategic plan, which was really the blueprint for the last 5 years, which yielded a lot of the accolades and achievements that you mentioned, Frances, earlier. And then we needed to develop a new one. And we have a lot of new board members since the last time we launched a strategic plan. We wanted to make sure that we were listening to our community, to our stakeholders, to our school board, and developing a blueprint that one would not argue is really very important at this point, at this juncture, given the fact that we're coming back from a global pandemic, given the fact that the teachers, the students, the parents have experienced something they've never experienced before. And then really kind of determining what do we want to look like and what do we want to achieve and what do we want to do for students and families and where do we want to end in 2026. And so myself and my cabinet colleagues are working on, we just finished our outreach. So we had a huge stakeholder outreach for the last 2 months. We're gathering all of that data, crunching all of that information. And then we are scheduling a retreat. We've had one retreat already with our school board. We have another retreat next week. So I'm essentially developing the process and kind of herding the cats through the course, the obstacle course, to develop an impactful strategic plan. And so that's my formal role. My informal role as Chief Strategy Officer, some would say, is to be the soup whisperer, the superintendent's whisperer, and really be a thought partner for him as he tackles new challenges and as he leads the fourth largest school district in America.
And you do that incredibly well, my friend.
Thank you.
The other thing that I think we should call out is when this pandemic started, you created a document called Continuity of Learning Plan that was shared widely, because you share almost everything you do widely. And a lot of districts were able to borrow from that and very quickly put into play their own plans using that as a template. So I'm sure on their behalf, they'd want us to say thank you. I know a few districts that used it and they definitely feel like that. So thanks for always taking the lead and just kind of jumping in with both feet to do the heavy lifting that you do in the fourth largest district in America. So let's get started with our M's. Can you share with us who your role models are and why?
For me, I have role models primarily outside of the industry of education. I also have role models inside. I think we'll be talking about some of those later today. But for me, it's women that can achieve great things in their workplace and also be there for other women and create supportive and nurturing networks that support females in the workplace. And then women that seem, because it really is optics, but seem to be able to balance, you know, their work, their family, their faith, their community work, and being fit and being healthy and doing things for themselves as well. And some of the ones that stand out, I'm sure some that stand out to a lot of your viewers and listeners as well, like Sheryl Sandberg was one of my early inspirations. She's actually an alum of Miami-Dade County Public Schools. There you go. I had to put that in there. Oprah Winfrey, obviously. I remember being a little girl, being in junior high and coming home every day at 4 o'clock when we used to use VCR tapes, right? So that I could watch the Oprah Winfrey Show. And then just what she's done with her career in terms of the span of her breadth, if you will, and the empowerment of women. And then of course, one that was on my bucket list to meet and I didn't get to meet and makes me very sad is Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Just a little tiny little woman, right? With an enormous footprint, enormous power, enormous voice. And so those are three that come to the top of my head.
Those are definitely Shiro's on the top of our list too for Keisha and I. I know that women who really, as you said, use their voice in incredibly powerful ways, much like yourself. You know, in fact, right before the shutdown, Keisha, you were mentioning the pandemic and the continuity of learning plan. My last public event was with 13,000 folks listening to Oprah and J-Lo living their best life. So another Oprah fan here with you. So let's transition to another M. Who are some of your mentors?
So just recently, I would say I was doing some speaking engagement and I was processing what I wanted to deliver. It was to, actually, I remember now, it was to a group of girls. I mentor a group of girls in a local high school here. It's an all-girl high school. I used to joke that I would retire and come back as the principal of this all-girl high school because it's all about girl power. And when I was preparing the deck for that presentation, I kind of had this epiphany that when I wound back the clock of my life, every single person that opened a door, I think role models for me are people that open doors and help you go get through it. And every single person that had been a role model, someone that created opportunities for me, were men. And I, you know, I used to think, oh, so-and-so and so-and-so, but it never dawned on me, like, there's not a chick in this group, like not one. And so they've basically been men, whether it was my first principal when I was a teacher who gave me my first job 30 years ago, almost to the day. He forced me to go get my administrator degree, to get my master's degree, to become an administrator. I didn't have any intention of being an administrator. I was a principal and I somehow was in a program with the district for mentoring. And the mentor was a deputy superintendent of schools, African-American male, George Koontz, Dr. Koontz. And he would rip me from my school. I was an AP. And he would take me from my school and bring me to the central office here on the ninth floor where I currently work and do his inboxes and to go through his email and do projects, district-wide projects. I don't know why, but he like selected me to do that. And then, of course, Mr. Carvalho has been a huge role model for me when I look at him, I think it's around opportunities that he's provided me, a lot of confidence he's had in me. He really does consider me a peer, an equal, and just the work ethic that he demonstrates each and every day pushes me to be better.
You know, I think that's probably the case for a lot of women because two things. One, I think sometimes it's hard for women to mentor other women because of the space we're in, there's a lot of competition. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we don't do that, right? We kind of maybe even put our elbows up and push people out. And I think it's admirable for the men, especially the men who've mentored you, to see the incredible potential when you were a teacher and an AP and say, this lady needs to be in a cabinet position and we're going to groom her up to that. So I think that is incredible. And I know Mr. Carvalho has fought long and hard to keep you in, you know, in his inner circle. I know, you know, you are no doubt highly sought after. And I know he probably has his elbows up to keep a lot of people at bay from recruiting you away. When did you look in the mirror and think I'm a leader?
Well, I think all of us, present company included, probably were called bossy at some point during their younger years. Of course, if it's a man, he has great leadership skills. He's, you know, an innate leader. But, you know, I don't know. I think when I think back, they didn't call it leadership back then. Now they call it leadership. I was a student government leader. I was an SGA officer. I tried out for cheerleading. I became captain of the cheerleading squad. I was a elementary school patrol. I see patrols all the time and I stopped them and I was captain of the school patrol, of course. I was 18 when I was called to serve in my first jury, appearance as a juror. And then I was like a little 18-year-old. There was 50, 60-year-olds on there. And then they selected me as a foreman. I'm like, great. And it was criminal, by the way, which is crazy. So I don't know, different things have, somehow you throw me in a room and it just emerges. For me, I think that it's, I feel really uncomfortable in like pregnant pauses. I feel like they're awkward. So like if there's a space, if I don't see things moving, like someone taking charge of the situation, for me, it's awkward. So then I feel like I need to get like, you know, get in there and help move things along. And I guess that it emerges as leadership, but it's just trying to get things done and trying to move a group, whatever that group is doing, whether they're a cheerleading squad or a group of jurors or a team of teachers. I don't know.
You definitely have some kinship with one of our former guests, Keisha. You might remember Carol Jago talking about this concept of being bossy, author and president of NCT. So I think we're ready for you two to have coffee together and further explore this definition. And maybe out of that, even sharing more ways that women are changing the world. And I'm curious to have your perspective on that. How do you see women changing the world?
Well, I mean, I feel that I have the pleasure to be surrounded by really strong women, my mother included. My mother changed the world in many ways that won't be written about, you know, but when I think about myself, for instance, I don't really consider myself a woman that's changing the world. I will always consider myself that latchkey kid, parents divorced at age 5, grew up in poverty, learned English as a second language, and then somehow or another ended up, you know, leading the fourth largest school district in America, teaching kids how to read and, you know, how to achieve at very high levels. For me, I think the women that I now surround myself with, it took that epiphany. I think it took that epiphany of realizing like everyone that gave me a leg up was a guy. Like, what is that? You know, and I think it was a turning point in reflecting about my life. I turned 52 years ago, so it was a really big, you know, like, let's think about, you know, how well I've impacted my community and what I can do in my next stage of my life. But I think that epiphany actually forced me to really think about how I can support women. And that's when I started almost treating people differently around me, those that are at the same level as I am in the organization. Mentoring, intentionally mentoring, not just socializing, but intentionally mentoring principals, assistant principals. Some of those principals, assistant principals were my students when I was a teacher or an AP. And doing this mentoring program, I work with Women of Tomorrow, and I meet monthly with a set of girls, and it's beautiful because you work with them since like eighth grade to graduation. With a cohort of kids. And so they're graduating this year from the International Studies Program. And so I'm super excited about Young Women's Academy and seeing them graduate. So I feel like I become more intentional, and I feel like I make space for women that have that intentionality to like work together.
So the real game changers are kind of the women who are in the throes of a position and can make their changes day by day, especially with, you know, great mentorship. I think that's,
you know, Keisha, also, I saw some data that really kind of triggered me, if you will. And it was through my affiliation with Cheese for Change. And it's really about this industry, right? And the education space. And, you know, 77% of teachers are female.
Yeah.
But only 31% of them are superintendents or CEOs, right? And of those 31%, only 11% are women of color. And, you know, when you see that, when you see the whittling down of opportunity for an industry that is predominantly women, and then at the highest levels, it's predominantly men or white men, you feel like, okay, first of all, you need to, you know, break that glass ceiling, and then you need to drag other people along with you, like you said, because typically we see each other as competition. And when we're, you know, that crab in the bucket kind of ordeal where we're bringing other women down, we're losing the race on gender equity in our industry and in many industries. The same thing applies in boardrooms, governors, mayorships, nonprofits, state legislators, Fortune 500 CEOs. I mean, the pattern is the same. But for me, it's more difficult to understand and to accept in a predominantly female-oriented industry.
And agreed. So, yeah, I mean, there should really be no reason for us to not dominate from the bottom to the top.
absolutely.
But that just absolutely doesn't happen. But that's why we have the honor roll.
That's right.
And you know, speaking of that, there are some mavericks out there that are kind of disrupting this. And I know some of them are on your list. So who are your female mavericks?
So I thank God for this group of women. So through Chiefs, and I have to give a shout out to Julia Rafael Bear, and she is the chief operating officer for Chiefs for Change. She works under a male CEO. I want to point that out. Mike McGee. I love Mike, but Julia's a COO. And what Julia has done in her role, and she's a role model for me, is created a subset of Chiefs for Change that is supporting women, like a women's affinity group. And so in this group, there are women that I have looked up to for many years that we now meet once a month. And we now are meeting virtually, but we meet virtually. And we talk about all kinds of issues that are affecting us professionally and personally. And we support one another through that process. We share a lot of resources. We do this after hours. So it's usually a happy hour, virtual happy hour. And really when you start hearing the challenges that they're having and then trying to help problem solve, it's almost half therapeutic, half, you know, social, but it's fantastic. And so I think for me, one of them is Julia Rafael Bear. She's on phenomenal leader. She's also partnered with Lillian Lowery. She's the former state superintendent in Maryland, and also Hannah Skander. She's the former secretary of education in New Mexico. So those three women are like a little trilogy powerhouse of fierce and formidable women who are supporting other women. And then in the group that I'm in, because it's kind of symbiotic, I have people in there that I have looked up to forever, like Barbara Jenkins, the superintendent of Orange County, who I've had the privilege of shadowing and being her shadow for a couple of days in Orange County. Penny Schwinn, the commissioner of education in Tennessee. That woman has little children. She's adopted little children while she is being sworn in, literally almost on the same day. Her husband sends her husband out for diapers and a crib while she's being sworn in as the commissioner of education in Tennessee. And then Angelica Infante Green, also a good friend of mine, commissioner of education in Rhode Island. So in a pinch, in a moment of crisis, you know, when you need someone to put your shoulder on, or someone ear to listen to you, I'll reach out to those women, and they feel you, right? They're in the same throes that you're in, whether it's school closures or now, how do you spend $1 billion in American Recovery Act dollars? Or I have a kid that's sick with COVID, but I have to go to a board meeting, like those kind of struggles that only are really unique to women.
Well, we'll definitely have to pull some of them into an upcoming episode of the Honor Roll. In fact, you gave me some interesting flashbacks for a moment, because there's some folks in your group that I actually sat in courses for my PhD with some of them on finance and policy. So it's great to see them leading the nation. You know, these trusted affinity groups and the way you talked about intentionality is so important to our growth and self-care. And you mentioned that, you know, half of it's like therapeutic and half of it's social, but really when it pulls it all together, it's really about the self-care that we employ for ourselves and help model for others. And I'm curious, as a woman, as a leader, as a person who balances it all, what are some self-care recommendations that you might have for others, or practices that you really hold true to on a daily basis that our listeners can learn from?
Sure. Well, there's lots. I like fitness, so I do exercise quite a bit. I used to be like crazy about Orange Theory, so I'm a member of Orange Theory. I love HIIT training. After a day of work, this is how I would explain it to people. First of all, I love data. So if you love data, Orange Theory is an activity that will give you a lot of data. So you're competing against yourself, which I love. But also after a full day of work, the last thing you want to do is like make a decision. Like, am I going to do calves today? Or am I going to do shoulders? Like, I just go in there, and if they tell me to, like, you know, meow like a cat, I'm just going to meow like a cat. Like, whatever they tell me to do, I do it. It's mindless. And it's an hour that you dedicate to yourself, and you shed, like I shed like 500, 600 calories a class. Now, when the pandemic came, I took to the streets. So I started running outside. Some days I don't feel like running. So I wear my Apple Watch and I go for a walk. I just go for a longer walk than I would a run. I love to read. I used to read a lot more fiction than I do now. I read a lot of industry, but also like just corporate business books. The Harvard Business Review is like on my nightstand. Let's see what else I like to. I like to watch TV. I've been known to binge. Sometimes I binged. Recently, I binged Bridgerton, and I binged The One. Just recently on Netflix. So when I see something I like, I'll just like go at it and finish it right away. And then I'll switch to reading and then I'll switch to a book. So just, I try to, you know, I do my nails. My mother always taught me to have my nails done. And from time to time, I will take a day off and I don't lie about it. I tell my boss, I'm taking a mental health day. Today's a mental health day. And I just, cause he's always curious, like, what are you doing today? And I'm like, it's just a mental health day. And so I'll hang out at the beach, read at the beach, go for a long walk. And that's how I pretty much self-care.
So balance.
Trying. Balance. I like to cook too. I love cooking. Yeah. So cooking for me is therapeutic. So I enjoy cooking for my family, for myself.
And hosting great parties.
And hosting fantastic parties.
Hey, now we have a game that we play to finish off our podcast. And okay. It's like a finish this thought game. So here is the first one, an event that changed my worldview.
An event that changed my worldview. I think for me, I've met a lot of amazing people. I've had the privilege of meeting a lot of amazing people. But I think when I met Michelle and Barack Obama, that was a big one for me. You know, politics aside, and it's hard to put politics aside, just the humanity, the presence that they both had, and what they said to my son. So my son was in the room with them, and I'll never forget, Barack told my son, the biggest decision you will ever make, this is the leader of the free world, the biggest decision you will ever make is who you select as your mate, your life partner. And I don't know if that changed my worldview, but it changed my perspective quite a bit, and affirmed and validated at least that decision that I made 31 years ago.
Well, I don't know if we have a better sentence starter or ender after that response. The next question is really about strength, and gosh, to put the Obamas there and all your powerful data stories about Orange Theory, of course, I'm expecting a sponsorship soon. How about this one? I became a stronger person after.
Oh, 100% after I decided to apply for the Boston Public School Superintendency. When I was asked to consider to apply. That's the truth. But once I made the decision that I would apply, the process was very long. It was grueling in the public. Everything's in the public eye. Many trips to Boston, many meetings, many questions, many like individual focus groups. And then managing my home, my family. I still have a school age child and my job at the time, which was CAO, and trying to balance all that. But for me, I realized how strong I was through that process. Everyone, I think all of us have a little bit of an imposter syndrome situation. And I realized I'm totally suited to do this job. And not only that, but I didn't have anybody, you know, carrying my water. Like nobody was helping me formulate answers. Nobody was, you know, trying to help me. I mean, I had some folks like in Chiefs for Change and in Broad and these organizations that I'm a member of that supported me through the process. But like I did that by myself, right? And I just realized it was grueling. I would do it all over again with the same outcome. I would still do it all over again because I learned so much about myself and just really how strong I am as a person. And I think I get that from my mom. So I would say definitely the Boston Public School Superintendency search.
I think that anytime you apply for a position like that and have to go through those steps, I think it's character building, like you said, independent of the outcome. And I think, you know, I wish you could have gotten that job because I feel like they would be in a great place now.
I didn't
have a great
get that,
superintendent, but
you know what? They do have a great superintendent, but I didn't get that job because I said the truth. And I will say the truth again and again and again. So I said, you know, one of the things I said was, I really feel that, you know, in order to move the system forward, we need to really consider consolidating some schools. If my approach were to win, I wouldn't have said that. I'm not stupid. Right. I know that that would not win me the position. But my integrity is such that if that's what I really feel needs to happen, how about if I get the job? Then when I get the job, what do? I backpedal out of it. I'm a flip-flopper, or I don't do what I think was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So 100% do it all over again.
You rock.
Thank you.
How about this one? My life improved when I...
I don't know that it... My life has continuously been improving. I feel like, you know, we talk about helping children. My job is to help children break the cycle of poverty, right? Help children and families break the cycle of poverty. I am like the poster child for that. But I think an inflection point for me was the moment that the commissioner of education stepped foot in my school. You know, I worked in a Title I school, like 90% of the kids were on free and reduced lunch. Like 80% of the kids were English language learners, very poor school in Little Havana, where I grew up in Little Havana. And I had the privilege of being the principal there. And then because of the data, I mean, there's hundreds of elementary schools in Miami-Dade and in the state of Florida. But because of the data, the commissioner of ed in the state of Florida decided to visit. And that became a huge inflection point in my life because the day after he wanted to hire me to work at the department to help turn around schools throughout the state. And had that not happened, I wouldn't have been, the trajectory of my career might have been very different. And so I had it was hard for me to leave my hometown. I didn't physically leave, but my focus was not a school in my hometown, but it was a lot of schools, many in my hometown, but others as well. And I think that that opened a lot of doors for me and allowed me the opportunity to develop a relationship with several superintendents, including Mr. Carvalho, and then really developing a friendship and a relationship that created, you know, the deputy chief of staff position, the assistant superintendent in the middle of the Common Core movement, the CAO position, and now the CSO position. So it's an inflection point for me that I think changed the trajectory of my life forever.
There's also another decision I think you made that changed your life forever around how your life improved. And my hunch is it has to do with selecting your partner, some advice the Obamas gave you. You want to share a little bit more about that response?
So after Barack said that about Michelle to my son, he said it to my son in front of me. I use that and I share that anecdote with the girls at Young Women's Preparatory Academy and girls in general that I mentor. And I think that I would not be able to manage and balance and have, you know, just the equilibrium that I feel that I have if I had not selected my life partner, who I've been married to now 31 years. And we went out on a blind date when I was 18 years old, for the love of God. Right, 18 years old, went to prom, and then we went to college. And while we were in college, we got married. But I was 21 when I got married. Like, who gets married at 21? Like, that could have been a major, Francis says me, but that could have been like a problem. You know, I mean, we didn't even have like, I didn't have a political bone in my body. I didn't know if I was a Democrat or a Republican there. I mean, I was still growing up, like I was a kid. And so thankfully, you know, sometimes people grow alongside of each other and sometimes people grow in very different ways, right? And it just so happens that I, you know, selected someone or someone selected me that we've grown together and we've raised a beautiful family. And, you know, that if he was not my life partner, yeah, I don't think I probably would have stayed a teacher. Maybe I wouldn't have been able to do a lot of the things that I've had the opportunity to do.
Well, you are definitely a model of continuous improvement in both your personal and professional life. And you have found a way to adapt and be incredibly intentional and heart-filled and honest in who you are as an individual and who you are in the capacity of being a leader. You know, I have learned so much from you in this dialogue and the many dialogues we've had over the years. And Keisha, I'm wondering, what have you learned from this particular conversation?
Oh boy.
Oh my goodness. I have learned that I am even more thankful to have Maria Scardo as my friend. And I have learned that you have to go through a lot of things. You have to overcome a lot of things to learn more about yourself. Like, you can't just wake up in the morning, you know, have self-reflection and feel like I know all there is to know about me. I think you have to be challenged. And Marie has put herself in many instances intentionally in challenging situations. And she has come out of those as a better person, independent of whether she got the job like she was referring to on Boston, or she got the man like she was referring to with her husband. So I just feel like and you're such an inspiration. Little known fact, frequently during the weeks, I will text her and give her an update on my health and fitness. And she will be like, I'm so proud of you. Or she'll text me and say, hey, are you exercising? What's up? So, you know, just having that quick check, you're just so thoughtful. And the community that you not only are building professionally, but one that you have personally with friends is just such a benefit to so many of us. And I just want to say thank you for that. So, hey, is there anything, Marie, that you didn't say that you'd like to say?
Well, I guess this will be the first time I say it publicly, but I will be retiring in September. Yeah, that's crazy.
You're so young.
I won't be retiring like I'm gonna grow grapes by the seaside, and you know, although I may have an herb garden or two, but
somewhere.
Yeah, I am looking at, you know, just the next career. I'm too young, and I love working, and I want to help children. And that's really my life's work. But I think that there's every good thing must come to an end, and I need a new challenge, and I'm really looking forward to it. And that's one of the reasons why I accepted this role, because I knew this role would allow me to really set the course for the next 5 years, leave a legacy here in Miami-Dade. That strategic plan will be approved in June by the board, God willing. And then in September, we'll open schools in the fall. I'll be here to open schools in the fall and help the superintendent through that. And in September, I'm looking forward to hanging up my MDCPS robe and seeing what's next.
Hey, and I want to tell you, I had a superintendent once that said, you know, the most important thing you can do as a leader is know when to exit.
100%.
And he told me that when each of us had decided to exit that district. And I think, you know, there is such a thing as staying too long. And I can't wait to see, you know, you've always got a place at K20 Connect. But I can't wait to see what your future journey is. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Francis and Keisha, for having me. It's been so fun. We should do this more often.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, Marie, as we think about the next part of your journey and the legacy, we always leave our listeners with a coaching question, something that continues to linger with them. And perhaps you'll have that great texting network now on Twitter with this question. And so I'd just like to have us marinate in this for a moment. So our coaching question for our listeners this week is, how might you create a network of possibilities to support other female leaders? And I think that's really what you've inspired today. So again, that coaching question is, how might you create a network of possibilities to support other female leaders?
Yeah, that's so true. And I hope our audience takes that seriously and really reflecting on how they can do that and how we can lift one another up, especially in education, into those leadership roles. We can't thank you enough, my friend, for joining us today and spending a little bit of your time with us. And your story and wisdom is infinite.
Thank you, Katie.
it's about leading, learning, and perhaps making sure we get some more of that fitness and self-care into our programming with one another.
Absolutely. Hey, please join us for our next podcast where we highlight another Shero in education and explore their M's and ask them those famous, what's the end of this statement questions. And don't forget to post the answer to your coaching, to Francis's coaching question, to our hashtag TL honor roll. That's R-O-L-E. Make sure that you put that hashtag there so we can all see what your plans are for creating networks for women. And until then,
be fierce
and be formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Francis Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at hashtag TL Honor Roll. That's TL Honor R-O-L-E.